What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Shireen.
And this is Anna.
And this is Ethnically Ambiguous. And today, we have a guest, as usual. And today, it's a very special guest. It's Ali Gandour.
Yes. He's an improviser. He's a comedian. He's an actor.
Yeah. We get into his upbringing, his mixed race identity, and growing up with multiple religions, and so much more. It's an amazing conversation. Don't go anywhere.
Say do.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi! Whoa! That's never happened. I want to die. I don't know.
Why would that make you want to die?
I'm kidding. Sorry. I always want to die. I'm Shireen.
I'm Anna.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we have an episode
of the show. And we have a very special guest sitting. The intros, I've noticed, get me really... We always have to say stuff about the guests when they're staring at us. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So I get flustered.
I'm so nervous.
Anyway, we have Ali Gandour with us today, sitting with us.
Hi, guys. I was really tempted to just continue to stare silently.
I know. Yeah. It happens every time. I need to figure out a different way to really segue into it.
To give some context to your existence, you're an improviser.
Please, yes. Please give context.
You're an actor. Mm-hmm. You're a comedian. I guess, could you be an improviser and not a comedian?
That's a really good question.
Improviser?
Yes, yeah. It would be a tough find, but I bet you could find somebody who was purely a dramatic improviser.
Like Shakespeare. Improvised Shakespeare.
I'm also sure there are people that prefer one term over the other. They're like, I'm not a comedian, I'm an improviser. Or I'm not an improviser, I'm a comedian kind of thing.
Sure.
Right?
What do you prefer?
I'm both. Yeah, yeah. I'm a comedian and an improviser.
Sick.
Yeah. And according to your Instagram, friends with former guest Drew.
Drew?
Oh, yeah.
Who did he sing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Drew's my dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was fun.
He's the best.
Yeah, he was really fun.
I'll have to listen to his episode.
We did his podcast.
He had a great line. He had a few great lines about people thinking people pay with jewels in India.
Oh, right. That was so good.
That was
but
great.
But we met because we did his podcast.
I'm too effing high.
I was so high during the podcast. I forgot the name of the podcast. But
with him and
James Mastriani. James. Yeah.
Oh my God. I was going to say Italian last name.
Uh-huh.
But James, Italian last name.
Which is, I know James is also a great guy. They're also funny.
Yeah. They're also funny.
That podcast is so fun. Also, I'll put James on blast for a second just for, since we were talking
please
about.
Do. He's so white.
No, he loves the story too. Just with name pronunciation that mm-hmm. we were talking about before. Granted, he's high. Everyone on the show is high.
I don't
high.
Think he pronounced our names right. Maybe he did.
Every single time it was different. I remember, right?
Yeah.
Well, the one that I got that I will remember for life. life. When people ask me, do you ever get a wrong pronunciation of mm-hmm. your name? Please welcome Ali Kandahar.
Kandahar?
He hit me with Kandahar.
I can imagine him saying that.
It was
with so much confidence. I can imagine.
And I think it's like he knew, Kandahar. Like that was a, you know, he had heard that in the news probably. You know, at some point he heard on the news, like, you know, fighting continues in Kandahar in right. Afghanistan. And it was like logged in his head. So yeah. then when he goes to my name, it just came out.
What did you say?
We just had a lot of fun about it. It was fun.
And there goes the white man keeping us down.
Then again, he has the excuse of being high on his podcast.
Exactly.
Like, if we mispronounce names, we're completely sober, as far as we know.
Totally.
But, but we should maybe do drugs to have that excuse.
What if my Diet Coke was just filled with pure vodka?
like you drink a lot of Diet Coke, Anna.
Someone told me a story about a woman on set who was constantly drinking a Diet Coke with a straw. And then one day she just like fell down a flight of stairs and they smelled the can of Coke. And they're like, what the fuck? She's been drinking this whole time.
Whoa.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. I forget who it was. It's like a somewhat known actress. I won't say who, but.
Does the straw guard against that too much?
Well, because but usually talent does drink with a straw to not ruin their makeup.
Yeah. And also like your teeth, I think,
right.
a little bit too.
Oh, right.
right?
Yeah.
I think it's just silly.
That's
but
funny.
They like. Smelled her can of Diet Coke.
That's really...
And they were like,
blue cover.
Okay.
Whatever gets you through that Mentos commercial. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Gotta make that money.
Whatever gets you through Glee. No, I'm just joking. That's not...
oh, God.
It wasn't Glee.
Okay, so let's...
I hope
let's
it wasn't Glee.
Reround. Let's pivot to Ali. Where were you born? Where were you raised?
I grew up in a town called Azusa, California, which is maybe like 20 minutes east of Pasadena, if you know SoCal a little bit. Yeah. So basically LA. And then I went to school at UCLA and kind of like stayed in this area since then.
Wow. Yeah.
Never
LA
left,
kid.
Huh?
Never left, no. No. Been sleeping, metaphorically sleeping on friends' couches ever since. So, yeah.
What do you mean metaphorically?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Just I've stayed in that area. I did spend like a year after college just like enjoying. I was doing comedy in the area, but I was finished with school, but I was also hanging out with people who still had 1 year left.
Mm.
So I was like very much Van Wildering it. Is that what that movie was called?
Yes. I'll believe you.
I appreciate the support. I spent like a good just fun year after finishing where I was just kind of like doing comedy and hanging out in Westwood.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you were going to that like improv space on Gailey.
Yeah. At the time, it was known as Ultimate Improv.
There you go.
That's like where I sort of started. I was doing anthropology at UCLA. So started UCLA Genetics, immediately got in and was like, oh shit, these are all the like future doctors of America. And I also am like bad at study habits and stuff. Like I did fine in high school and then got to UCLA and was paired with people who were also smart, but like knew how to handle themselves in class and stuff.
Yeah.
I studied abroad in Japan, came back, changed my major to anthropology. It was just kind of like, let me just finish college. I got to get out of here. And then my last year at UCLA was when I really started just taking every class that I had avoided that like was a possible passion, you know?
Oh,
so like music, this screenwriting, this comedy, that like acting all, you know, all over the place. And in that period was when I kind of like found my people finally, which was crazy.
In what class?
There was a very cool class that was put on by a grad student. So it was like, you know, I think we got like 2 units out of it or something. But it was a class that was devoted to sketch comedy, which was really cool. Yeah. So every week we would get – shout out to Adam Simon. He's amazing. He's like a great playwright as well. But every week we would get to watch like a new sketch comedy TV show. Like that would be the homework assignment. And then we'd have to like write a paper on it answering some kind of specific question. So it might be like – the UCB show 1 week, and then the Sarah Silverman program another, and then Mr. Show another. And so 1 week,
that's cool.
it was amazing. It was just like the
so
coolest
fun.
Class.
It just sounds like I would do that without a class.
Yeah,
right?
Honestly,
it just sounds like you would just have fun doing it.
No, I'm like a big fan of taking fun seriously. Like that's like I think that's like what a lot of improv comes down to. You know,
comedy.
But so 1 week there was our homework assignment was to watch Mr. Show, and they had like a copy of it in the media library, And I went there at like the exact same time as another guy in the class. And so we had this weird like meet cute moment of like, aww, oh, well, we should just watch it together.
Oh, yeah.
And so we
That's
like,
precious.
Yeah. And so like while we were getting it loaded up and stuff, we were talking and he did improv at that place, Ultimate Improv in Westwood.
Mm.
And I was like, oh yeah, I always see that place, but I've never seen a show or anything. And he was just like, dude, no, but like the way you read sketches in class, like the whole, like you just go try out. Like here's how the audition works. It's so easy. It's run like a workshop. Just go try. So thank you to him.
Who's that?
That's Chris Reinecker, who like does all kinds of stuff now. He's all over YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got into improv and just like fell in love with it immediately.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
So let's go to maybe a little bit earlier. Like when you were in high school, you obviously got into UCLA thinking you were going to do genetics.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Were you at all interested in comedy or anything back then? And you were just like ignoring it as a hobby? Or was it just like actually a new thing you discovered in college?
Yeah, I think I'm like a pretty realistic person. Like even now, I think it's like audacious to have this idea that I'm not going to provide any kind of service to society besides like, I'm just going to be entertaining, you know? Like, I think that's like, like it still hits me as like, what the fuck are you thinking? Like, that's such a crazy path, you know?
I always think I'm like, I'm creating something someone can listen to on their drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm a commute entertainer.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, all the best people will be like, oh, you're making people smile. You're making people's day. You're cheering people up.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, getting issues out there, all of that stuff. But I'm still just like, I'm not like hunting something and bringing it back to the village. I'm not curing disease, you know? So I think like I always just, it took a long time for me to accept that could be a possibility of like, this is what I would do for work.
Right.
It was a lot of like tiptoeing into like, I could do this play. Oh, I could do this improv show. Oh, I guess I'm kind of good at this. Oh, like this competition went well. Maybe I'll just keep going. And so it's just like baby steps until finally you're auditioning for stuff and it's like, oh, I guess that's your paycheck now.
Were your parents influencing you at all during your high school and or college experience?
No, they were pushing me academically. And then my dad was like pushing me both academically and soccer wise. I think he always like wanted me to get a scholarship for soccer, which was on track until like junior year of high school when I missed the bus to a game because I was hanging out with my girlfriend at the time, like just doing
what a disappointment
high school kissy bullshit, like out on some bench or something. And so I missed that bus. And then my coach asked for my jersey like the next thing.
Oh,
and
fuck.
And so then I was like, I was just kind of like, you know what? Fuck it. Like I'm out for good. That kind of thing. And then I left soccer behind until adulthood when I rediscovered it. And I was like, oh no, you love this sport. Like,
you could have had a fight.
Yeah.
Were you guys like D1 where it was that aggressive?
I think he just wanted to kind of make a lesson out of it because he did. Yeah. He tried to walk it back when I came the next like practice to turn in my stuff. And he was like, no, I just meant for that game. But I was like, I think I was already resolute and like my okay, I guess I'm giving this up. And so I just gave him the duffel bag.
You're like, it's too late, bro. Calling your bluff.
I was like, no, take back, dog. And I threw it down.
He's like, no, he got me.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry if this is obvious question, but what ethnicity are you?
So I'm
obvious.
No,
well, I don't know. I can't
tell me.
Sometimes I can tell by the last name, but I can't this time.
Just sensing where you're from.
Yeah,
I'm just joking.
She's doing a lot of like psychic hands at me.
Right. Yeah.
For the viewers at home. Mm-hmm. My dad is Arab Israeli. So he grew up in Palestine. My mom is essentially a white girl from South Dakota. Ethnically, she is half Swedish, half Dutch, I guess. Yeah. But very much like grew up on a farm in South Dakota, white girl. So
when did your
quarter,
dad
quarter Swedish,
here?
Quarter Dutch, half Arab, I guess I would say.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a crazy mix.
It is a crazy mix.
I'm interested in your dad's story a little bit. How did he get here and how did he meet your mom?
Before you answer that.
Yes.
It says you're some wild other shit on the internet.
Really?
Oh, what is
it? It says you're like Jordanian and Lebanese.
What?
Oh, you're this is like... Does it also say I'm the president of some trading company in Lebanon? Because I think that's the guy that you probably are looking up.
Oh, weird. I didn't actually click anything further. I was just doing a basic Google search.
Sure.
And I saw those words, but didn't actually look further even. I wasn't even looking to see what you were, but I saw those things and I was like, maybe that's what he is, but didn't really look further.
I think there's one other Ali Gondour that comes up when you Google me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
that's
like
him?
He's like a Lebanese CEO. So like,
and it's crossing out her next question of how you became CEO of
how
a
company. How you get so rich?
When you run a boardroom, what do you...
That's funny. Okay,
no, I've seen that come up multiple times. Yeah.
That's really funny.
I'm going to look it up again later.
Yeah. please do.
Also, I sent him an email asking if he wanted to do our podcast.
Also, that guy just starts doing comedy and like blows my whole existence off the internet.
Oh, man.
I wonder if he gets hit up for UCB stuff on accident.
I'm sure
sometimes.
He does. Yeah. And he's like, sorry, no, I have to. I can't leave work.
That's really funny.
All right, sorry. Okay, answer the question.
What was the question again?
Your dad, what his immigration story and how he met your mom.
So he came to the United States when he was 20, I believe. Yeah, about 20. He came to South Dakota. He had an older brother who was already here. So, like, he was able to get him, like, you know, sponsored as, like, a work visa kind of thing. He came, started working at a hospital in South Dakota, which is where he met my mom.
Wow.
Is your dad a doctor?
No, they're not doctors. My mom is a respiratory therapist, and my dad was working in the, like, psychiatric tech department. One very lovable just like trait that I always heard about my dad that like also always surprised me in a fun way was like a lot of the people in the psych ward like really took to him as like a calm kind of like presence, you know, which was cool. Cause you know, you get people who get like violent and angry and stuff and they were always like, oh yeah, like Muhammad would be great with him or Mike would be great with him.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Classic.
He had to
classic
go
white,
Mike.
White name.
Oh,
Mike.
Yes. Yeah. I think it took, I forget how long it took him, but he like, it took him a minute to even tell my mom that his name was Muhammad, I think for a while.
Out of all the names, it was the most like Arab Muslim one. Just like, my name is not Mike. It's Muhammad.
But like when she met him, she's like, well, I don't know, you don't seem like you're from here.
I know.
And he's just like, no, I swear, just Mike.
Mike Thompson. I love baseball. Yeah.
And she calls him Michael. She's like, nope, just Mike. Yeah, it's not Michael.
Mike, short for Muhammad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was a period when I was like trying to figure out whether I was gonna give myself that kind of, you know, some kind of alter ego or something. And I remember my dad being very against it. And I was like, You changed your name to my, like, what foot do you have to stand on in this argument? And he was just kind of like, no, but like it's different now, you know, like times change.
In his defense, and I was like, Ali is a pretty I don't know, like easy name for a lot of whiteies, no?
Sure.
Yeah.
I get
I guess your dad could have gone by Momo.
He could have gone by Momo.
We float that to him.
it's such a small change, and I feel like my life would have been incredibly different if my dad had gone by Momo.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, Momo.
Same exact person, but just his entire life, he's Momo. I just feel like I would be a different person.
Momo is very calm.
Yeah.
Momo liked to party.
Momo liked to party.
Momo now, hungry.
He's turning into like either a sentient robot or like a gorilla or something.
He could only talk in like, what is it, third person?
Right.
He just automatically goes, hey guys, Momo's here.
Yeah.
Oh, no. What's wrong with him?
He's a monkey that knows sign language at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mo is a common nickname for Mohammed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met a lot of Mo's.
Or
Ham.
I don't know any Hams.
Huh. There's no.
I know Hamids.
There are some Hamids.
Hamid.
All my cousins that go that are Muhammad. I have like five.
They all go by Steve.
I have one Mike. Maybe I have a Mike, and then I don't know if the other one even has an English one. But yeah, I have a Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That part I never really found a good like analog for Ali. I'm not too excited about Al.
You're not an Al. Yeah. You're not an Al.
Yeah, Al would be a hard energy to carry around.
Yeah.
You're like 45 at two.
Yeah, maybe at a certain point. Yeah, I can take it. You know, no offense to all
the
Al's.
It's like a 2-year-old named Al. Hey, guys, I'm Al. Yeah. I work in construction.
I love sandwiches.
But I was an assistant to this like music manager guy for a while at like a pretty big place. Some of the clients include superstars Korn, Limp Bizkit, and Stained. Yeah.
Wow, sign me up.
Yeah, it was truly like it was the weirdest job I've ever
talking
had
to,
for sure.
What like 11-year-old me being like nobody gets me.
they also had, I think I was most excited about Jane's Addiction. That was like when I first got the job. Yeah. I went to go help my I had a friend who was working there. He brought in like two friends to help on this like temp assignment. And I remember at one point he took a phone call from Perry Farrell, and it was just like him talking on the phone to Perry. And I was like, wait, that was like, you were just on the phone with him? And like immediately just fell in love with the idea of that job.
Yeah.
That boss at one point was like but what, so your name's, it's just, it's Ali. Do you have, like a nickname or something? You know, it's like yeah. that like immediate discomfort with needing to say that as my right. name over and over.
That's so, your name's three letters.
Honestly. Yeah.
Like,
so, okay, let's go back. How did yes. your parents, okay, so your parents meet at this hospital.
Yes. Yeah.
What brings them together? How does your dad court your mother, or does your mother court your father?
I don't know too much about the specifics of their origin story. What I know is their first date was on St. Patrick's Day, or like their first like get mm-hmm. together was St. Patrick's Day, and they drank green beers. That was like a detail that my mom always like fondly remembers. I don't know too much about the in between, because they dated for a while and then decided to come out to California. And like my mom's entire family is all in the Midwest. His yeah. entire family is all in the Middle East. So it very much just like started this new, you know, bubble offshoot of yeah. our family tree that was just like in California with nobody else.
They sound like adventurers. I like them.
Yeah. It's so wild yeah. because like I missed the boat on their adventurism. Like,
you stayed in one place your entire life.
I mean, like truly, yeah. I mean like I, but like by the time I came into the picture, they had like gotten their adventures out.
Right.
I have an older sister, and she's like jealous of a lot of my upbringing, just because I think like second child always gets a lot, like easier. Your parents are better at it. They're less like freaked out discipline wise, you mm-hmm. know, times have changed a lot more.
Yeah.
But she's always like, I did get to go on vacations, and like, you never get that. You know? Like that's like something
easier
that
with one child.
Yeah.
Totally.
Or no
yeah.
child.
Or no child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Child's plural.
Yeah. Okay. So, what was your upbringing like? Was it more secular? Because if your dad was drinking beer, I don't imagine him very religious.
I got pretty lucky in that like neither of them like took to alcohol too hard. I think like that green beer on St. Patrick's Day is a great example of like when they did drink, which is like I would see my dad like drink a beer on the day of the Super Bowl, and like that would be kind of it, you know, or like
he's
my
like
mom.
Blackout.
yeah.
Lightweight.
Yeah, halfway through a Natty Light, he would just blackout. Yeah.
Natty Light.
but yeah, I think they both, you know, it's just like wine occasionally, that sort of thing.
I guess I brought that up because it just, for me, it implied that you got, that maybe they were more secular and not very like strict.
Sure, yeah. Right? My dad was Muslim and my mom is Catholic, and when I grew up, I definitely got like a lot more of the Catholic side taught to me by my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and my dad would both probably have different stories on this or different like perspectives on it. My perspective growing up was like, I think my dad kind of assumed that it would be like Islam would be like passed on to me automatically somehow, you know, or like maybe even just like that entire side of that culture in general, that like, which isn't, you know, it's not that crazy of an idea, because I think like for him, that's how it always would have been, you know, like it's the thing that was different was that he left the environment where like it does just automatically transfer,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
So me growing up in America, it was like the only place that I would be getting that from would be like directly from him if he were going to do it, you know? And I think I only got it in like small doses.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my mom was like, you know, she was going to church every Sunday. She like, she's the person who, you know, taught me how to pray, you know, like I would go along with her to church and stuff. My dad was like always pretty fine with that until maybe in my teens, the like religion issue came to a head again. I remember I had this weird experience where I got, you know, like kids will tease for like any possible difference that they can find, you know, like some of my best friends, we like got in this weird fight. And I remember they were just giving me shit for like not having a religion.
Yeah.
Huh.
Which I was like, I didn't feel ashamed of like as an identity thing. But then they were making such a big deal about like,
God, just kids.
It's so weird. Yeah. Just finding a thing to attack and then going for it.
I'm curious. So when you're going to this Catholic church, no one's like, oh, why is your name Ollie?
I guess nobody knew my name. I don't know.
That's good. So no one was like, hey, you're random.
Right.
Why are you here?
I know. It was an anonymous enough experience, you know. I'd be holding the hand of a white lady.
Yeah,
so
that's true. That
they're
helps.
Probably like, oh, he's cool. He's cool.
Oh, he cool.
Yeah, he checks out. Great.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I remember like coming home and talking to probably my dad first about it, about like, oh yeah, this thing happened, and they were like, you know, they were teasing me for like not having a religion. I just like felt really weird. And him being like, well, no, you do have a religion. You're Muslim.
Yeah.
And me being like, am I? You know, yeah, like question. Yeah. Like, and he's like, well, yes, you are, because you know, you're my son, and that's like our family. And I was like, but I don't think that's how faith works. Right, you know, right. Like I don't, like, I get the cultural aspect of it, but like I don't, isn't it like belief? Isn't it sort of like understanding and being a part of that entire tradition, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's when he went like, oh shit, I haven't transferred Islam to him, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, it's so interesting. I want to ask another question about this, but first we're going to take another break, or our first break, I mean. We'll be right back with Ali.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Okay, we're back with Ali. I have a question. I think this is a really fascinating discussion about religion, and especially because, like, I grew up with Muslim parents. Anna grew up with a Muslim upbringing as well. But like, it is really implied that you're Muslim. Like, it's like, I think culture and religion are so embedded for a lot of Muslims in the Middle East that there's no difference between being ethnically Muslim or culturally Muslim and then religiously having a faith. So did you ever think as a kid, after you had this discussion with your dad, did you feel like you had to choose? Like, did you feel conflicted?
Yeah, I felt definitely conflicted. Like, I knew that I had already like had my own questions about just like religion as a whole, you know? I mean, like, just to skip to the end, like, I'm just very secular now. Yeah. Like, that's sort of where I landed after, you know, all the dust settled. But yeah, I think I get what you're saying about it being like an automatic kind of you know, transfer there. But I also don't know if that's like necessarily unique to Islam. I think that might just be the result of like a more homogenous family unit. You know what I mean? Like,
that's,
I guess,
a good,
like,
point.
If you're in like a Christian family and you have kids, you're not like expecting your kids to automatic, like, all of a sudden be something else.
That's,
you know,
a good,
it's
point.
Sort of like,
that's,
oh,
we
raised you Christian, you're going to be Christian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're Buddhist, we raised you Buddhist, you're going to be Buddhist, you know? I think it was maybe more a result of just like that combination that was in my household.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if people are saying you don't have a religion, but you were still going to church, or you went to church with your mom.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah.
How did that, like, they were like, Catholicism doesn't count, or like, weren't Catholic enough?
I wasn't calling myself Catholic.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just, you know, and they had like their specific, like, you know, sect of Christianity that they were calling themselves. And I was just kind of like, I don't know, I go to church sometimes.
You
know,
did,
like,
you,
that was sort of where I was
did
at.
You get the benefit of both like Christmas and Eid, or was it just like they canceled each other out, you didn't get either?
We celebrated Christmas more than Eid. But I think also it was like my mom would kind of like spearhead that stuff, you know?
Dad, it's tough to try and get it from a dad, because dads are kind of like, hey, you know, I'm here.
Yeah,
I make the money. I put the roof over the head. Please don't ask too many questions.
Yeah.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also like for him, you know, and this is a story that I've heard from like many immigrants. It's like there's such a focus on assimilating when you get here. You know, there's such a focus on like finding that way to like immediately like hit the ground running in America and just like be an American. And I think that he was good at that. I think that like it didn't mean that like in his heart he was abandoning anything else, but I think that like that also meant that there wasn't that automatic like transference of like here's 100% of the culture, now my son has 100% of the culture too.
I think it's also I want to get in his head a little bit. I feel like because your name is Ali, it's a religious name,
just like
his name Muhammad, like those names, even with him calling you Ali or like whatever, like it just implies to him like this is a Muslim man. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think subliminally, like he didn't even question that you wouldn't be a Muslim just like him.
Sure.
And I mean, as someone that was raised Muslim, I went to mosque every Saturday. I went to Arabic school. I don't really believe in anything anymore. Like I just kind of like am okay with not knowing. But I really think that like being culturally Muslim is a thing for me. And I think it's a thing with a lot of religions. But I think the majority of the world only views like Jewish as both a culture and religion. And I think it's like the majority of religions are both a culture and a religion.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So that's my kind of take on it. I think I've come to realize like I can be a proud Muslim without believing in God in a strange way, you know? But that's
I do also think moms tend to spearhead a lot of things. And if your mom was like, well, I'm Catholic, your dad's not exactly teaching her how to teach you to be Muslim. So it's like she's just doing her thing to make sure you're like stable and alive. And so like if she's not, I mean, that's just in my opinion, because my dad is secular and my mom's devout Muslim. So like I know my dad at no point was teaching me about Islam. He was just kind of like showing up and being like, I'm here, please get good grades, whatever, be a doctor. Didn't work out. But my mom was like I guess being a girl, like I was always kind of like, I understand Islam a lot more because my mom is constantly like talking to me about it. She's like, oh, well, this is what you do. Here's the Quran if you want to check it out. Like, it was never a pressure to become or like to practice, like pray five times a day like she does. Or like, there wasn't that pressure because I think my dad is so secular that I think she was just like, there's no point in like, they will do whatever they want anyway.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But like, I know a lot about Islam and being like a good Muslim girl or woman, excuse me, because my mom was actively like telling me things and like keeping me in the know and like taking me to mosque with her and stuff. Like, my dad didn't do shit. Like, that's, he was just like, dads are sometimes so like, I thought you'd learned.
Right, you're like, for me, it was kind of not the same for me just because both my parents are Muslim and my dad's family is the more strict conservative one. And so I felt like a lot of pressure just to be a good Muslim.
But do you feel like you learned more from your mom or your dad?
I honestly think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Only because my mom is a little bit more lenient and like she never really like imposed rules, and my dad was more like the rule, like you can't wear this, you can't, like,
that was my Muslim dad doesn't as do well. That
like, you know, so it was, I don't know, it's just interesting.
But I feel like some of that is just cultural, like culturally Middle Eastern men are just very strict,
but with my dad in particular, that meant that was his like a Muslim culture, like for him, like we had to be a good representative of Muslims. It's, and I don't think culture for him is any different than that.
Interesting.
But I want to ask, did your parents ever argue about this? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that there was discussions before I was born on how it was going to be. And then like stuff didn't pan out the way that it was, you know, like I don't know the full scope of that, but it definitely was an issue.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point I was like, guys, I'll settle it for you. I'm nothing. you know? Like,
okay, let's fast forward a little bit.
Sure, sure.
So you were back in Ultimate Improv and you're realizing you like to entertain. Do you tell your parents this? Like, do you tell your parents like, I'm gonna graduate with anthropology and maybe pursue something that is uncommon?
Yeah, you can come out to your parents as an improviser.
No, I'm serious. That's,
Well,
you
gotta.
Yeah, I think I graduated and I knew that I wasn't gonna be. I knew that I like anthropology was really interesting. If I was gonna do anything special way that I probably would have like needed to do like a master's program or that sort of thing. But I was like excelling at the level that I was at in this comedy thing. So like they knew about it. It took a while for me to get comfortable enough to invite them out to a show, you know? There's something especially like hairy about improv shows to invite, you know, people that you care about or family members. It's like if you're doing a play or something, you can kind of know whether it's like shit or not, you know? And it's like you can always have a bad performance, but like
improv
show, you truly don't know what's going to come out. I've had shows that I've invited my dad to, and then like my teammates are like putting fireplace bellows in the other one's ass and like blowing them up like a balloon and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm glad that they're seeing this show.
Yeah.
And this
is the, out of all the ones, this is the one I'm most proud of.
Yeah. But I think, you know, they had their doubts. I also like, I wasn't doing this just like solo. Like I was pursuing comedy while I was also like, I had that weird, you know, entertainment manager's assistant job. I had this administrative assistant job at this like occupational therapy clinic for developmentally disabled kids. So I was like, I was doing other things while also kind of like comedy was bubbling.
Yeah.
And then once I started booking and it got to the point where I had to really like throw my focus to that, then I think they were like, okay, I guess he's doing fine. I guess he's making enough money with it. They've been a lot more supportive now. And I think in the beginning, they were a lot more just like hands off, like, let's just see where this goes kind of thing.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was cool.
That is nice. So after you're at Ultimate Improv, where do you go? Like, how do you start to be like, okay, what do I do next for improv? Like, do you find UCB or like, what do you do?
Yeah. So that's where I started my training. That theater eventually became the Improv Space, which like had a long illustrious life in Westwood as well.
Is it gone now?
It is currently relocating without a known destination, which is interesting. Yeah.
Just floating around.
Yeah, exactly. It exists in like spiritual form right now, but they haven't quite decided the new
It's
home.
In the cloud.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We've uploaded its existence.
Yeah.
Just at a certain point, I feel like I started looking around at like, oh, what other places or where are the people who are like getting more serious about comedy or not even just improv, but just like where are the like comedy people coming out of and coming from? And then saw a few shows at UCB and I was just like, oh, holy shit. Like this is the coolest place. Mm-hmm. This is like the coolest vibe.
Yeah.
The smartest stuff, the most like consistently funny kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I decided to start training there.
So it sounds like your main comedy passion was improv. When did you start doing stand-up?
I don't do stand-up.
You don't do stand-up?
No.
I am a jerk.
No, it's okay. Hey, you didn't think I was the president of a Lebanese trading company. So.
How was I to know?
I'm kidding. It's
on that note, though, did you ever have a desire to do stand-up or did you ever think about it?
Yeah. I also, it's like, it's almost silly to me that I haven't tried stand-up at this point. And like, I should do stand-up. I have stuff written that could count as stand-up. Mm. I've been, the like acting doors have been opening a little bit more than that. And I feel like stand-up, like I know that once I get into it, it's going to be its own thing to crack and its own set of people and its own community. And there's something about improv that like the collaborative aspect of it, I really, really like. And there's also a thing specifically that improv does that combats like my perfectionist like OCD brain a lot.
Yeah.
Anytime I sit to write something, it's like the number one obstacle is just not constantly revising and going like, oh, this could be better, or like go back and this could be fine tuned. Like I love
you can't control it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like with improvised stuff, whatever offer you make, that is the choice. And now we have to support that and that, and like we keep moving forward and making choices.
Yes. Just let it exist.
Exactly.
Let it be.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
It's very refreshing that you don't do stand-up.
Did you think he did stand up because I called him a comedian?
Kind of, yeah. That's exactly what I thought. But I really deep, like the more I think about it, the more refreshing it is that you realize what you love about improv isn't really offered in stand-up. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'll probably start it like next week.
All right. Yeah. When this episode comes out, we have a comedy special.
We'll
HBO.
Look like fools.
Yeah.
Sure. And you'll be a CEO of some company.
Yeah.
I'm a fool.
Yeah. Could really make us look dumb. Okay, but you mentioned acting. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into acting?
Via improv, honestly. Yeah. Like I, my first acting that I did was in high school, but it was like, you know, I hung out with a lot of like punk kids and like a couple like this one couple like punk rock sort of kids, a guy that liked Nine Inch Nails a lot. Like I kind of like found my friends via music in high school. Mm-hmm. And then as senior year, almost as like a joke, my best friend Chad and I at the time were sort of like, oh, what if we took like drama as an elective? Like that'd be funny.
You LOL, know? Like, bro.
Yeah.
So ironic,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, like I mean, that'd be like, it'd be crazy, right? You know? And like we got into it and just.
And then like, you were like serious actors.
Like true. I mean, we like loved it. It was fun. And also, it was also like anytime you do something and like you pick it up quick, it like feels nice. You know? So I that was. At the time in high school, like a sort of a fun thing coming through and there being this like clique of drama kids and then getting in out of nowhere. And it's like, who the hell are these two assholes, you know?
Yeah, one named Chad. That's probably a tough one.
Poor Chad.
Chad and Al.
He existed before Chads were Chads, you know, and now he's a Chad.
Chad. Yeah. I would be like, it's actually pronounced Chod.
It's Chod, yeah.
Just to try and distinguish myself. Yeah. So I'm curious when you thought, or like what, when you considered yourself having... in quotes, like, made it enough that you could be like, Mom, Dad, check this out.
As an actor, I felt like as soon as I had to stop, like, working at a job because I was getting, like, enough auditions or, like, opportunities to act that it was getting in the way. Like, when I had to start turning down auditions because of, like, this, like, random assistant job or something, that's when I was like, okay, I think you have to, like, make that leap of faith and go out to pursue this full time. Comic wise, I don't know. I still get like squeamish inviting my parents to things, but
yeah.
There's I'm lucky enough that there's like a few shows that I can consistently like invite my folks to and know like you're gonna see a good show if you come
That's
to this
good.
One, you know? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, so as you're getting into acting and stuff, like you know that you enjoyed it as a high schooler, but. Mm-hmm. You're in LA now. You're like you're always in LA, but now you're in the city of LA,
sure,
the big city. And you went to UCLA with a lot of really serious people that want to do acting.
Yeah.
So how did you get started, even just like booking things, or like how did you, like you said you started improv, but how did that help you?
Yeah. So that theater, Ultimate Improv, at the time, I got onto a main stage team there and was doing stuff there like weekly, and they had. Put together this thing where every so often they would do like a headshot mailing. It's a very common thing for actors to, you know, print out like get like 300 headshots printed as like an individual and then send them out to a bunch of, you know, you just get a list of all the agencies. Mm-hmm. You're basically spamming and you're hoping for like one response, two responses like, hey, we saw your headshot, come on in. The theater was doing a cool thing. The guy who was running it, JD Walsh, who was like also one of my very first teachers and one of my best teachers, he was doing a thing where he put it together as like the theater had a packet. So it was like, we're this group of people. Here are some of the, you know, shows that people at our theater have been on. Look through these, you know, 11 headshots of people at our theater who are looking for representation, which I think helped set us aside from the pack a little bit more. You know, I think like when an agency gets like a packet from a theater, hopefully it looks a little bit better than just like, I'm a random person who is
That's
one of a thousand.
Really helpful.
It was incredibly helpful. Yeah. And I had a big giant eye catching afro at the time. So, that also in a headshot, I think like for
is
a commercial, for a commercial, you can probably find a picture of it somewhere, but, cut to the Lebanese trading company guy with a huge afro. But I think especially commercially, it was like a very like eye catching.
Yeah.
Kind of work. So I got lucky enough to like get into a good. There you go. There.
Oh,
found
what?
One. Yeah.
That is it. You were lying. That is a huge fucking fro.
That's a huge fro.
And they're like, book them. That is impressive.
And look at that face too. It's like, please let me sell car insurance.
Oh,
you know?
That's true.
Wow. Yeah.
He's like, I work at Wendy's.
I want to know about the end of the fro, but first I want to go to the break. So we'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance.
Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
And we're back. I genuinely do want to know when you said goodbye to your fro and why.
So there was a big piece of chewing gum. What? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. That would be wild.
I had it for like a really long time.
Because it seems like that would be a signature look.
Yeah.
Like that seems like your identity.
Yeah, it was. This is all like, it's like embarrassing to talk about this seriously, but it is like, it was like a serious thing.
I'm talking about it seriously. I know. Hair is a huge deal.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you for appreciating that. It's a huge deal. And then there's a part, if I could get sympathy for one piece of this whole thing, it's mm-hmm. that when you're an actor with headshots, any like big vanity decision that mm-hmm. you make now also comes with a price tag of needing to get brand new headshots.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, you know what, I hate my long hair. I'm going to cut it short because that's how I feel right now. It's like, well, let's factor these other things into the decision. Mm-hmm. Do you have the $300 to shell out for a new thing? Is your agent going to hate this new look? Yeah. Is this going to ruin all of your type stuff? And like being, you know, just needing to focus on that. I know it's like a very first world problem thing, mm-hmm. but like, God, I miss just being able to like, I feel fucking depressed. I'm going to shave my head and like right. live with that for the next whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had it for a very long time. I was using that headshot. It was like, it was working. It was a very distinct look. It was disqualifying me from, I think, like a lot of like more mainstream roles, you know, like
that's a lot more of a character look.
Yeah, yeah. I could definitely do a lot of, you know, like the
crazy friend,
the sort of like stoner, like the like hipster artsy mm-hmm. kind of thing, which was like great. And it was working great for commercial stuff. At a certain point when I started getting feedback that like I looked a lot more grown up than I do in that headshot, like the headshot that, you know, Afro one is very like,
you were a child.
Cherubish.
Yeah. Oh, cherub, you know? Is a great word. Yeah. Yes.
You're a little angel.
So as soon as I started getting that kind of feedback.
Were you getting a lot of cherub roles?
Yeah.
Every cherub in a commercial. That's all we. Yeah.
When I shot my 20th Huggies commercial as a cherub. when I was getting enough of like, hey, he looks like a lot more grown up than like more leading man-ish than this. Then I was like, okay, I'll get new pictures, but I'm also going to cut my hair because I've like had this for such a long time.
Were you ready?
I was so ready. Yeah. Because it was fun, but it's also like, I ended up just like hiding in beanies a lot, you know? It feels like
big beanies.
Giant beanies. It feels like, at its worst, it feels like if you were like wearing like a big, bright, fun, goofy shirt and like you just didn't feel that way, you know?
Oh, right.
Like you're like walking around with like a clown nose or something and people are like, oh, cool. And you're like, don't fucking talk to me. Yeah. You know? And it's like, well, why do you have a clown nose
it's
on?
That, like, it's definitely like fun guy inviting look.
Exactly.
And like, you like to party,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm sad.
Yeah, no, honestly. And I like, as I got older too, and I like my, you know, energy naturally got lower and I got more like jaded and depressed.
Yeah.
I would be going to these auditions and like sitting next to people who like were that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I was like, oh, I get it. I got sent here because I have the same hair as you, but I'm not like a fucking nutball.
You're
a serious actor.
Yeah. Oh,
so man. What kind of roles do they send you out for like now? Like what's your,
now that you look grown up,
now that you're an adult man,
yeah,
no longer a cherub.
It's like the pros of the new look now are like I can kind of blend into whatever. That's mm-hmm. like also a con, you know, like if you can kind of like
you're ambiguous.
Yeah, I think like before I used to be a lot, like I used to be able to do a lot more smaller reaction stuff, and like the like look plus a small reaction was like equaled a lot. Now I think I have to like, not, I'm not like a bigger actor, but I have to like work my ass off a little bit more mm-hmm. to like figure out like, okay, let's like make this like a funny thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I go out for everything. It's like husband, boyfriend, friend. Mm-hmm.
But they don't ever like try and corner you like ethnicity wise.
That's like a whole other thing. Yeah. Really? Yeah. I definitely like they in recent years, they've been, you know, great about like writing in parts for people of color. And like I've been happy to watch it change. It's also like it's got a long way to go.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. The funny thing now that like fucks me over in just again a very first world problem thing to have, but like if there's a character that's written into a script and you can tell it's like, oh, and this is the one ethnic role. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because, you know, I'm ethnically ambiguous, because my mom is white, because mm-hmm. like people can sometimes see me as whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll have a harder time landing that right. part, because it's like, well, if we're going to cast a brown guy, like he's going to look brown.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be.
Yeah, that's a good point, man.
Yeah. So sometimes that can get limiting.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That sucks. They're like, no, we need to appear diverse.
Yeah.
It's if you're signaling it, it's, you know, shitty. If you're actually trying to be diverse, that's great.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I can't wait for like in 10 years when it's sort of like, oh, this character, he's half Arab, quarter Swedish, quarter Dutch.
I was just thinking like being mixed race is even more, I think, inclusive of so many things, because there are so many mixed race kids out there that probably don't feel represented in someone that's like, I don't know, just whatever they are, you know?
It's true.
So I hope that is a near future thing.
I mean, ideally, we all mix so much, white people are gone forever. Could you imagine?
Oh, God.
That would never happen.
No.
But I do think
that's how we have to infiltrate.
I think it's gotten good, because there's a lot more roles now. Like, the fact that they write roles specifically for people of color is great.
Yeah.
And there are also a lot more roles where they are open to all ethnicities, as it should be, I think, for most parts.
I agree,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't necessarily be something.
That's great. I think like a lot of the stuff that I end up booking is just like, it doesn't matter what this person's ethnicity is, we will be seeing everyone for it.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. That's how we want it to be, because it's like the ethnicity shouldn't run the story. It should just be about a human.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Who exists within time and space. This is a new play I'm writing about a human who exists within time and space.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting for Ethnic Godot.
Waiting for Ethnic Godot. That's a pretty genius title. Do you like anime?
Did you steal my idea?
You're wearing an Evangelion shirt?
Oh, I was
shirt?
Like, where did that question come from?
But I was going to ask about when we were talking about your youth, but it missed my mind. But I keep looking at your shirt. It's a great shirt.
I thought like something I did just gave off anime. Yeah, I'm wearing an Evangelion shirt
afro.
Right now.
Yeah, it's the afro mixed with the Evangelion shirt.
Wow. And also,
I used to have one of those. I don't know what happened to it, though.
That's so cool, because this is so nerdy, but this doesn't even say the name of the show on it. It's just like an organization within the show called Nerve.
I mean,
that's exposing
my nerdiness.
No,
too,
it's fucking great. Yeah.
But
you dorks.
Shout out all the Evangelion heads out there.
Seriously though, it's one of the best animes ever.
It's so good. Speaking of like religious themes.
That's what
stuff,
I was gonna bring up. God. Oh my, for me, Evangelion was the first anime that I watched that really made me think critically about religion.
Yeah.
Because it's all about like angels and faith and your upbringing and just like all the stuff. And I was as a kid watching it being like, fuck!
Yeah.
It's so dark.
There's a question. So it's for people at home. The short version is it's kids who have to pilot these mech robot type things and fight monsters. Sounds like a very similar story, except the monsters that are coming are known as angels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, I just remember even like halfway through the series, at one point, the main character is like, if they're angels, why are we fighting them? And it just like blew my mind.
Exactly. You know?
There's so much. It gets so dark and so fun. It's like one of the best pieces of.
So why are they fighting them if they're angels?
You gotta watch.
You gotta watch it. It's a whole story. But I do think, first for me, I'm like maybe projecting onto you my experience, but like for me as a children of immigrants, as someone that was raised Muslim or like raised with religion in general, I feel like anime was like this like fantasy route that I can like watch and like make sense of the world a little bit more. But then that one in particular really just like fucked me up forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know, man. I was also just like a nerd, so maybe that was another reason why I watched anime.
Yeah, I think like maybe to hopefully to tie it back a little bit, like I think that my like lack of a clear, like singular cultural identity growing up, I think it really like encouraged me and forced me to kind of carve out what my own shit was, mm-hmm. you know, or like, and it's like, I get like everybody obviously like makes their own personality and their own interests and stuff like that. But I think like, I never really had that ability to just like reach out to somebody and be like, oh, hey, you're the same race as me. We're friends now. You know, yeah. like I didn't have like a ton of that growing
That's
up.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the other side of that, that it bums me out so much when someone will extend that to me and I'm like, yeah, cool, let's be friends. But it's really hard for me to like meet them there at the same level, you know, or like they start speaking to me in Arabic and like I don't know any Arabic to like hit them back with, you know. It's
it sounds isolating.
Yeah. It can be very isolating.
Did you feel isolated as a kid?
Yeah, I think it was very isolating in some ways. I think like growing up, like I was definitely aware that I didn't like fit into any tribe too easily, you know. It was like in like elementary school and middle school and high school, like my best friends were sort of like, in elementary school it was like, you know, a lot of like just like straight up like a Mexican group of friends and then like a Filipino group of friends, you know, and like I could see that immediate bond that came between those kinds of groups, and I just like didn't have that. And it's also, you know, you feel other for like many reasons, so to feel like another layer of other even amongst the others, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
I grew up with like a bunch of Filipinos and I was like the only Iranian, and I was always like, yeah, totally, and then like, no, I don't fit in.
It's weird being like the only thing. Like me and my sisters were the only Syrians in our high school for I think the entire time we were there, and then like a younger generation came and they were more Syrians, but it's weird being the only thing. But for you, when people ask as a kid, like, what are you? What was your response? Like, I'm sure you got that question, right?
Yeah. I would say I'm Arab and a quarter Swedish and a quarter Dutch.
So you were really, you're very technical.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, whatever you want to call that. You know what I mean? Like, that was my answer.
Did you grow up with any cousins around at all?
No, because we were in our little Los Angeles bubble, you know. My dad's family in the Middle East. My mom's in the Midwest. So.
Did you ever go back? Yeah. Did you ever go back?
Yes. I went to Israel once when I was like too young to remember it. Actually, I think I just remembered the other day, like my earliest memory, I think, was like crying in Israel. Like that was like one of them. Yeah. And then I went once again in like 2000, 2001, which was like very cool, very crazy.
Do you see your family?
I saw so much. And that's such a wild thing to connect to. Like just this entire world of people who love you, you know? It's
Did you have one of those instances where you met like a cousin who was like kind of hot and you're like,
oh my God. Oh shit.
Not everything's an episode of Rami.
That's an episode of Rami. That's like every Middle Eastern person who goes home and is like, damn, I got that one hot ass cousin, but we're cousins, but we don't really know each other. So this is kind of weird. That's a very real phenomenon.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know.
But I guess
if you have like enough cousins, what are the odds that you're not going to be attracted to one?
Right. Maybe? Yeah. There's always just one where you're like, the fuck?
Sure.
I mean, look like the rest of us.
That's funny.
But so that must have been an amazing experience for you.
Yeah, it was. And at the same time, I also like the entire time I was like, God, I wish I could like speak the language to be able to, because there's so much. And that was the best too, was just like the purest attempts from my, you know, smaller cousins who are, they're doing so much more work than I am, because like they know some English. They've been taught some English in schools. And so like I had, you know, for example, my dear, dear cousin Rami, who would, you know, come up to me and my sister and be sort of like, do you like hamburger? And we're like, we really do. And he's like, yeah, me too. Oh. Do you like soccer? Yeah, me too. And it was just like truly like a list of just like endless like do you likes, and it was always the sweetest thing.
All
and
the
like
English words he knew, just like lining them up one by one.
Yeah, it was great.
So cute. I also have a cousin named Rami.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I have a cousin.
You said it was everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Rami.
Wait, and she's Arab.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like I've only met one other Arab Shireen, because it's a Farsi and Arab Persian name.
Oh sure, okay. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
everyone always assumes I'm Persian because it means sweet and Farsi.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. Ah, it's cool though.
The other quick story of like trying to bridge the language gap that was really funny was my my sister, she was talking to one of our like younger cousins, and she noticed that on her like computer keyboard, it's got like all the like, you know, English characters that we were used to, but then like above them, the set of like Arabic letters or Hebrew letters.
Yeah, that was in my cousin's house too.
So like, you know, it allows you to like type in Arabic, type in Hebrew. And my sister like all of a sudden had this like light bulb moment of like, wait. And so she starts, she's like, here. And like, you know, the computer is set to be typing in Hebrew, but she would go and like type like, you know, hello, like H-E-L-L-O to put it on the screen and then like point at it and go like, huh, hello. And like my little cousin's looking at it just going like, Heshemev. Like, it's just complete. Like, my sister thought that
it would translate.
Like, for a second, that, like, by putting the English letters, that that would do the entire translation. And this poor little girl was, like, reading this, like, gibberish Hebrew on the screen, like, Kafka Schnifka. Just like nothing.
I think cousin drink.
Truly.
Crazy.
Yeah. Do you like alcohol?
It's an attempt to connect. That's all it really is.
It was so sweet. And, like, my sister was the adult in that situation.
Right. Too, right.
Like, what an idiot. Yeah. They don't teach them nothing out in there in America.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Do you have any desire to go back again?
I would love to. Yeah. My parents just went back, which was awesome. It was like the first time that my mom had been in like forever, and the first time my dad had been since we had gone. Yeah, I would definitely love to. It's just like travel is so expensive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, yeah.
Another episode. Traveling to Israel and Palestine. Yeah. Can't get into it today.
Tips for how to do it under $150. Yeah.
Store yourself into someone's luggage.
Yeah, truly, truly.
Poke holes to breathe.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Ali, what are you up to now? What's life like in your world?
I'm doing a lot of stuff over at UCB. I'm on a good handful of shows. I'm on a show on Friday called Bangarang. That's an amazing team.
I don't know when this will come out, so maybe don't say Friday.
Every Friday. Yeah.
I'm still a jerk.
Yeah, I'll just run through the plugs real quick. Yeah. Fridays, 8 p.m. at UCB Franklin. Bangarang is amazing. Saturdays, 10:30 at UCB Sunset. The Dragons are amazing. And then also, if you ever want to come out and watch an ASCAT show, I'm very frequently on those on either Saturday or Sunday at both theaters. Yeah.
Those are all amazing shows.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you, man?
Also, I'll plug one more for this audience especially. There's a team called Benetton that I'm at. We have a show once a month, and it is improv based on tales of racial tension or awkwardness. So it's like we'll interview an audience member. We'll have like a guest just talk about something, as our founder and host Mono says, a time in their life that wasn't quite. So Benetton, do you know Mono?
He was on another our show.
Mono's great.
Probably he's one the of the funniest. Most legendary episodes.
Oh, yeah. Awesome!
I would recommend everyone listen to that. Yeah. Even you, because we learned about his mom,
and we
she
learned
is,
about Mr. Hummus,
and she. That's all I'm gonna say.
You gotta go listen to hear truly an epic tale.
Mono's story is amazing.
It's
crazy.
Crazy.
I will. I'll listen to that. I'll listen to that.
Benetton.
Yeah.
Benetton.
Yeah, and that's once a month. You have to find that in the calendar, but.
But where can people follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Ali_Gondour. You can check the spelling on the website. Description.
Everything is tagged below.
Cool. Yeah.
Everything is tagged.
And then my Twitter handle is very difficult and stupid, but you can find it on my Instagram or on the tag
as
well.
On the tags. Yeah. It's like, isn't it like __?
Yeah. It's like a very good password. Yeah. Stupid. Yeah.
One weird character with three numbers.
Yeah. Exactly.
His pass. His Twitter handle is PA money sign W0
capital R. X.
It's just password.
Thanks so much for being here. You are a delight.
Yes, thank you for doing the show.
You guys as well. This was a blast.
Yeah, this was really fun. It's always just, I don't know.
I enjoyed myself.
Every time, you never know someone's story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I thought you were a CEO of some company. That's funny. I didn't even know that.
I walked in here. You guys judged me right away. Look at this CEO of a company.
Look at this rich kid.
I was like, Jesus Christ, he's so rich, he can't even afford shoes.
Look at this anime nerd. No, I'm just kidding. He's wearing shoes.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk to Ava after this, too.
Okay. Well, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. You can follow us at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B, on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G, on Instagram. I am Shireen at Shiro Hero on Instagram and Shirohero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnier on
Twitter. And until next time, stay
Muhammad.
Stay Momo.
Stay Momo.
Stay Momo.
Okay, there you go.
Bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.